This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Lookout weekend. We are locked and loaded on a busy Friday edition of the Lombardi Line. We're live from downtown Las Vegas at the world's largest sportsbook inside Circa Resort and Casino. Stormy Bonantoni with you. No Michael Lombardi today, but we are fortunate to have my former partner in crime, Matt Brown, on the desk in studio here, current host of The Handle every Saturday and Sunday, noon to 3 Eastern. Reunited, and it feels so good.
No, I'm not a former NFL executive, but I can play one. If anyone was to ask me some questions today, I will fake it.
There you go. Yeah. I always tell Michael, like, he's got Super Bowl rings, I've got a Ring doorbell, but we make it through regardless.
Yeah. I don't even have a Ring doorbell. So there you go. What do I have? I bring almost nothing to the table, but I'm going to do.
Are you
really
an onion
well
ring guy? You've got to have rings of some sort. That's all that matters. Yeah. Does it feel weird for you, by the way, to be on that side of the desk? Because I know typically on The Handle on Saturday and Sunday, you're sitting here. Does it feel awkward?
It's more about what my profile looks like in the shot that I'm worried about. Like, is this my good side or my bad side? I don't know. I might not even have a side.
The hair looks excellent.
I don't even have a side.
That's all that matters. We got a great 2 hours on tap for you though today. Coming up in about a half an hour, Alec Lewis, Vikings beat reporter for The Athletic, is going to stop by, get the lowdown on, honestly, Kevin O'Connell's expectations for Sam Darnold.
Lots to talk about with him, for sure.
Lots to get into. Yeah. And in hour two, excited to have Jennifer Piacenti join us, senior betting and fantasy analyst over at Sports Illustrated. She's got lots of plays and thoughts in NFL futures market. She crushed it in MLB this week, so we'll see if we can get any daily plays for her today. And, of course, help you get geared up for the fantasy football season, because those drafts are coming fast and furious this time of year. But yesterday, we kicked off the NFL preseason week two with the Eagles and Patriots. Eagles score late on a 2-point conversion to win 14-13. Another game, Matt, where if you were chasing steam, you lost.
You're sitting here watching this game, and you might be looking at depth charts this morning, and you might see it says Jalen Hurts is a starter, and it certainly says Kenny Pickett is the backup, but that might not actually be the case after what we saw yesterday. Tanner McKee definitely went in and outplayed Kenny Pickett, and you see Tanner McKee and you start to listen to these beat writers, because I'm following along, kind of doing the whole, like, you know, what's going on with these guys that see him on a day-to-day basis. And some of those guys beating their chest a little bit, doing the, I told you so, like, I was watching this going down. This guy is way closer in this race than everybody thinks. And I think if you're the Eagles sitting in that room this morning, you walk in and you go, dang, we got a decision to make. We got a real big decision to make.
Pickett looked totally lost.
Yes.
Like, and you look at some of the deeper statistics, 19 dropbacks, 49 yards. In terms of air yards, he averaged less than a yard per completion, which is crazy to think about. But good on Tanner McKee, former Stanford quarterback,
absolutely
getting a good look here.
The thing for me, too, is like anybody that has listened to any content that I've done this offseason, I am very high on the Eagles. Yep. I have an incredible amount of money invested in this Eagles team. And one of the reasons was like, hey, look, it's not an ideal situation, but if something were to happen to Jalen Hurts, at least they have Kenny Pickett. The dude at least has starting experience. He at least can come in and maybe fill in admirably for two or three games if you got to roll with him without Jalen Hurts. And then I watched that game yesterday. I understand this is, I don't want to overreact to one preseason game, but he looked at the stink out there.
Yes.
And he, let's couple that with what we've seen of him, his body of work. Yeah, it's bad.
Another unfortunate negative for the Eagles, they lost one of their key rotational guards in the win, Tyler Steen. So Mekhi Becton, former top 10 pick who failed to have success as a tackle with the Jets, he'll be the starting guard for the Eagles. So that's something to keep an eye on certainly as well. But the big story that everybody walked away from the Patriots game yesterday was seeing flashes from Drake May. Mm-hmm. We only saw him in preseason week one go 2 of 3, 19 yards. So to see him get in a little bit of a rhythm yesterday and look good, he had the rushing touchdown. Honestly, two of his best throws of the game ended up being receiver drops, but he was dialed in on those plays. So I think there was some optimism from Patriots fans about the young rookie.
Yeah, it was one of those things where I thought it would be, you're not starting him, not necessarily because he's not the best guy, but you're not confident enough in the talent around him. And you don't want it to be one of those situations where you go out there, the guy's running for his life, taking a million sacks, no receivers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Then I open up the Worldwide Leader this morning and pop open this where they have come out now. QB1 still open after last night because of Drake May's step forward. So while we've heard all offseason, no, it's Jacobius, 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 Jacoby. We don't want to put Drake May out there. Here we go. We pop it open and Gerard Mayo comes out and says, oh, by the way, this is now open again.
So this is my fear. And on the Lombardi line, once a week, we do a segment called Storm Warning, where basically I vent my frustrations about random stuff. And one of them was the Patriots situation. Then Gerard Mayo and the New England Patriots were saying all of the right things about how they're going to let Drake May sit back this year, develop, have the opportunity to learn. Because, I mean, how often do we talk about quarterbacks more often being ruined than they are developed? And I said, okay, you're saying all the right things. Now, will you actually do it? Or when Jacoby Brissett struggles, and already in the preseason in limited action, we're like, what are we watching here? But it's just the preseason. But if and when he ultimately struggles in the regular season, are you going to pull the plug and put Drake May in there?
The thing that I have been screaming with this Patriots team that is just a little bit of a bummer for them is, you know, a lot of times we can look at the schedule and find the natural slot where this guy's going to come in. You just kind of know when the season starts. You go, all right, they're going to put the Band-Aid out there, and then the rookie will start in week 8 because they have a week 7 bye. He's going to start in week 9 because they have a week 8 bye. Then you look, they were one of the teams that drew the week 14 bye, you know, so like you can't wait until then. So there's no like natural place to slot him in as well. And so that's one of the deals too, where I think if you're the Patriots, you just have to realize like, okay, do we just start him from the beginning? Because there's no easy place to slot him in after buys it is anyway. Story, make no mistake, it does not matter who starts for this team. They are still going to be the worst team in the NFL. I have so much money on this team being the worst team, the last winless team, all the different ways that you can fade this team. There's just no talent there.
There you go. Season win total 4.5. It is juiced to the over at -160, but the expectation is going to be a brutal year for the New England Patriots in year one without Bill Belichick, Gerard Mayo stepping in as head coach, and they are the longest shot in any of the divisions in the National Football League, to give you a little perspective there. Also, as I mentioned off the top, steam chasing did not go well in this preseason game. The Patriots opened a 2.5-point under dog. They closed a 3.5-point favorite. Obviously, they end up losing outright from that standpoint. You could have had an opportunity to have a nice middle there if you got in early and then late on the plus points here. But in terms of like big picture, Steve Mackinnon on VSiN.com, and there's a great write-up. He's doing these each and every week, just stats, trends, analytics, all of these different things that you can follow. Last year in the 2023 NFL preseason, when a majority of handle backed a team and a line moved 3 points or more, those teams are 3-13 ATS last season. And then last week, Adam Burke put out that stat that of closing line movement, 1.5 points or more, if you were chasing that, they went 1-9 ATS. Last week already, we're seeing one of those as an issue here. Some other headlines I want to get to. The Falcons, in 24 hours, have made some significant additions to their defense, signed Matthew Judon from the Patriots, and then yesterday bring in Justin Simmons.
Yeah, so if you were like me, someone that was also invested in other teams in this offseason, Falcons, because I looked at that division and I'm like, okay, they're going to go. This was before the Kirk Cousins signing. They're going to go address the quarterback position, and that will instantly make them the best team in this division. You're going to go. So you're sitting there on draft day. You're going, Kirk Cousins has already been signed. Everything's great. We're like, wow, this team probably has the luxury to trade out of this spot, get moved down, get another asset, do all this. Like, this is perfect for this team. I'm like, oh, they're staying. Look at my little draft board. I'm not an expert, but you know, my little draft board, I'm like, doesn't seem like there's a defensive guy that's like really fits in this slot. That's going to be interesting. What are they going to do? Are they really going to take Rome Odunze? I don't think they really need Rome Odunze. And then when they walked to the podium and they said Michael Penix, and my jaw dropped, and I'm going, can I cash out of all of these bets that I have on this team? But yes, at least they went in and have gone two different times now here in the last couple of days and addressed the defensive side of the ball, which really, I don't think any of us have a question about the offense, right? No. I mean, it's Cousins, it's Bijan, it's Pitts.
Last year, the biggest criticism about the Atlanta Falcons was just the underutilization of all of the talent and the weapons they had. Me, as a Bijan Robinson fantasy backer, like, I was reading Don't Kill Myself books every weekend. Yeah. Like, why are we not giving him the ball within 10 yards? What's happening? And so I think there's a lot of excitement around this offense, certainly. But the fact that they're able to get some pieces on their defense, which to your point was such a criticism in the draft, we on this show were exceptionally critiquing and upset with the decision that they made, because they ranked 32 of 32 in pass rush win rate last year. They have fewer sacks than anybody over the course of the last 3 years. You need to do something to that defense. And now they've got two veteran presences that are going to make a difference.
And then you have Simmons and Bates as your safety duo. Nice. That is about as good as you're going to find in the NFL as well.
And I know Simmons is taking a little bit of a step back. He's still a very, very talented.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a little older, but at the end of the day, like if you're literally just comparing players, player to player, yes, you want him in your backfield over the majority of players that you could get.
Okay. So when you look at the Atlanta Falcons overall, season win total, 9.5. They're an odds-on favorite to win the division, in a division that we all expect to be not good. Once again, what else is new? So the team that hasn't been to the playoffs in the last 7 years, high expectations for them. Big picture, do they live up to them?
Yeah, I mean, and listen, I was saying that it's all on Kirk Cousins and whether he was going to come back and be healthy. I mean, like Penix, at least you have him as an option. Sure. I don't think that the upside obviously is not the same as when you have Kirk Cousins, but you do have an incredible amount of weapons around. If you know, break glass in case of emergency, you have to go to him. So I really do still like this team. I'm way, way down on the Saints comparatively to the rest of the industry. I'm down on the Bucks because they ran just on the right side of injury variance last year. It's an older team. Typically in the NFL, it just doesn't work out 2 years in a row. So I think that regresses a little bit. And I think the Panthers are a couple of years away.
Yeah, the Panthers are the Panthers.
Yeah, they're a couple of years away. Like, they're doing the right things, yes, but like they're a couple of years away.
It was funny initially when our recent NFL betting guide was released. And by the way, after the NFL preseason, there's going to be a re-release with all the injury updates there. VSiN.com/subscribe. But when you go through the chart that has all of our VSiN show hosts and analysts' division picks, that in the NFC South, not a single person picked the Bucks, despite them having won the division the last 3 years. I thought that was very telling about where people view that team and Baker Mayfield and all of that.
Yeah,
right now,
it's just you look at the guys that they have to rely on, and they rely on a bunch of dudes that are 30 plus. And like, again, they could run on the right side. Variance is variance for real. Like, you could run on the right side of variance for multiple years and then it go in the other direction. I mean, it's not saying that it has to regress, but it usually does.
Yep. Again, the Atlanta Falcons -130 to win the NFC South. We're going to take our first time out of the day. When we come back, lots more news in the NFL. Dak Prescott said what about his current contract situation? We'll get into that and a whole lot more when we return on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Matt Brown in for Michael Lombardi today. Stormy Bonatoni with you as we welcome you back to this Friday edition of the Lombardi Line. Week 2 of the NFL preseason kicked off last night. Week 1 was a great opening weekend for rookie quarterbacks. A lot of the performances got people talking, one of which, very notably, Vikings rookie quarterback J.J. McCarthy, who unfortunately we found out this week, done for the season, ended up having a torn meniscus, needed a full repair surgery. To help us talk all things Minnesota Vikings and more, we welcome into the show Alec Lewis on the Progressive Guest Line, Vikings beat reporter for The Athletic. And Alec, I just mentioned the excitement around the performance of a guy like J.J. McCarthy. How much did this loss now for him for the season just take the air out of the sails for this team when they learned that he was going to be done?
Absolutely brutal. I mean, this is an organization that has had so many quarterbacks and some that have succeeded at varying degrees than others. I mean, like Kirk Cousins for 6 years, he definitely produced from a statistical standpoint. I mean, you go back in the past, Tommy Kramer, there are a bunch of guys, but the idea that the fans of this organization who have won a Super Bowl for so long would have a young guy who could provide hope was what made the early part of training camp so different, so fun. And then you mentioned Saturday against the Raiders at US Bank Stadium in front of the home crowd. He threw an interception and then responded like incredibly well, impressed everybody. And if you've talked to me like the way I have, I've talked to people inside the building for weeks now, and you hear about the swagger, the aura, the confidence, the positivity. And it's exactly what you said on Monday night when Kevin O'Connell mentioned the soreness. It did take the wind out of the sails of this kind of positive hype train. And then to hear Tuesday that he tore his meniscus and then Wednesday that it was the full repair that he was out for the season, just a bummer, brutal. And now this team kind of left to pick up the pieces a little bit.
Alec, we were talking a little bit before we got started here, and you said you had a feeling that it was going to be Darnold all along as far as the starter goes. I always thought that was a slippery slope. With Darnold only being 27 years old, what if he plays really well? Like, what if he plays really good, and then you find yourself in a bad spot? Because, I mean, 27 is not old. You know, it's not one of these stopgap guys that's coming in at 35, and you know for sure there's no upside. I mean, you know, we see guys play to 37 all the time. You can have a quarterback for a decade. Now you find a situation where he's definitely going to be the dude for a year, stepping in with a pretty talented, at least, kind of offense to go along with it. A couple of good tackles. I mean, I guess you could argue about the interior line and stuff. I mean, is there a world, though, that exists where Darnold plays good enough and this could be his gig?
Yeah, I mean, the slippery slope aspect of it, like years ago when Vikings GM Kwesi Adofo-Mensah was first talking about an extension conversation with Justin Jefferson, he called it, I think at the time, a champagne problem, which I think was like a nod to a Drake lyric or whatever. But that's kind of how I would have viewed that. Like if Sam Darnold, even with J.J. McCarthy healthy, had performed incredibly well and above a standard that I think most externally would expect, that, I mean, it'd be a positive problem to have to then sort through. But you're right, Matt, in that I think part of the reason they signed him to the one-year $10 million deal was because they felt like this offensive infrastructure in terms of skill players with Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, potentially T.J. Hockenson when he's back, Aaron Jones at running back, and then the coaching staff with a bunch of really high-end guys in terms of Kevin O'Connell, the head coach, Josh McCown, the quarterback coach, Grant Udinski, the assistant quarterbacks coach, Wes Phillips, offensive coordinator. Like, they felt like they could surround this guy in a way that transcended what he was surrounded by in New York and Carolina. Now, San Francisco last year, totally different deal. But I think there has been optimism internally that really with Kevin synced up with him from a play call standpoint and with the skill players they have, that they could surprise some people offensively. So now there is even more of an onus on him and this offensive staff to do that without the fallback and fallback hope of a J.J. McCarthy at some point down the line this season.
Vikings reporter for The Athletic, Alec Lewis, joining us on the Progressive guest line. And Alec, I feel like Kevin O'Connell is saying all the right things about Sam Darnold in these press conferences, but then we, from the outside looking in, see the ugly pick six at practice and another interception the other day, and it feels like he's seeing ghosts again. I know in these practices, you're probably more apt to take chances and things like that, but from your evaluation, being out there at practice, listening to guys talk, how do people feel about Sam Darnold this season, regardless of the talent, just with him himself?
Yeah, the practices have kind of felt like the MO of his career in some way, where it's like the highs are really high. There will be some days where he drops a 60-yard bomb to Justin Jefferson. You're like, holy cow, I cannot, like, there's not a lot of people in the world with that type of arm talent. But then there are times, like you mentioned, where in Cleveland Wednesday, he scrambles out to the left. He looks like he has a check down. He tries to fit the ball into Justin Jefferson, and it's picked off down the left sideline, where you're like, you can't. But the guy who's turned the ball as much as he has over his career, like, you can't be doing that. And so it's tough. It's also like, this is not the most sexy radio conversation to talk about ever, but like, it's really hard when you're watching practice and you don't get the practice film where you can rewind and look back into where you can evaluate every little aspect of it. So while you see tweets of reactions at practice everywhere across the NFL every day right now, it's so incomplete because it's just impossible from the human naked eye, the media eye, to really get the full extent of what's going on. I know that's not the most fun thing to say ever, but that is kind of how I view a lot of this stuff, because it is moving so fast. There are so many dynamics of offensive line and receiver routes and all this stuff. So it's really, I feel like week one in New York with Dexter Lawrence, Brian Burns, Kayvon Thibodeau pass rushing, like, that's when we'll know, like, does this guy have what it takes to mentally process? Because I don't think the arm talent's ever going to be a question for Sam.
Alec, I'm a big fan of the Lions in the division, but then you look and kind of, you know, listen, because the Bears traded for Keenan Allen and got a first round quarterback that everyone's, you know, kind of crowned them as, he's definitely going to be good this year. Even though the fact that we've seen rookie quarterbacks take time to adjust to the NFL all the time. And then I personally think we're getting a little ahead of our skis with the Packers. We have 1 year of sample size of Jordan Love playing well. I mean, sure, he could be great, but again, we only have 1 year of sample size. Where do you think the Vikings kind of stack up in that division with all of the other teams?
Yeah, well, we have rightfully talked about quarterbacks for 7 minutes, but I do want to talk about Brian Flores' defense, because I am not sure there is a defensive coordinator in the NFL that invokes fear for the opposing team on game weeks the way that Brian Flores does. And I just watched the Cleveland Browns joint practices, and we could probably talk a lot about Deshaun Watson and the way he's looked and their offensive line and how it looked. And they were not exceptional out there, to put it very nicely and very lightly. But I think when you have a Brian Flores coach defense that is as versatile and as dynamic as it might be. Now, there are questions at cornerback, a little bit of questions in the interior defensive line. But just all in all, with some of the talent they have and the continuity in the system, I think that defense will become the identity of this team and probably give it the chance to stay in games. But how the Vikings stack up in the NFC North, I mean, I do think they are vying for not to be in the cellar. I mean, I really just I think that's the reality right now. You guys know with where you're sitting, the over-unders, if you look up, it's probably like 6.5 wins. So they have a lot to contend with in the division. And then just overall, their schedule is really tough. They start in New York, but then they play Houston, San Francisco, the Packers, the Jets, I mean, the Rams, the Lions early on. Like, it's every year in the NFL, but definitely this one for Minnesota. Like, it's tough sledding with who they have to face, and there just aren't a ton of, like, boxes that you can check of, like, that's an easy one and not. So we shall see. But they have their work cut out for them. There's no question.
Hey, you nailed it. The win total is 6.5, which is 3 wins fewer than anyone else in the division on those season win totals. Last thing for you, Alec, with the preseason game against the Browns coming up this week, what's the latest that you can give us on the injury front, especially because I know you were the first to report on Jordan Addison. What's the latest there?
Yeah, he, according to Kevin O'Connell, the Vikings head coach, avoided a major injury with that ankle. And then Justin Jefferson spoke Thursday afternoon, and he kind of made a comment like, you know, he might be out a couple few weeks, talking about Jordan specifically. And so, I mean, just knowing how much they need him, they're never going to rush these injuries. Like, if you talk to the Vikings players, they think this training staff cares more about, like, their ultimate long-term recovery than probably most within the NFL. So we'll see. But without TJ Hockenson to start out the season, I think they're going to really push internally to have Jordan ready to go. And it was good because it sounds like they avoided a really serious one. And if that had been serious at this point, you just feel like got to find a lucky penny or something with how this has gone, because it has just been relentlessly just awful from a lot of fronts going back a couple months in Minnesota in a way that I think people internally are like, we cannot have nice things. This is not fair.
Alec, appreciate your insight so much. Don't work too hard, okay?
I will. I mean, that's just my nature, but I appreciate it. When there are more injuries or stuff to report on or features that take way too much time, I will be on it. Thank you guys. Appreciate what you guys do.
I don't doubt it at all. Amazing. Alec Lewis does a great job covering the Vikings for The Athletic. We're going to hit the break here. When we come back, shifting gears from the NFL to a little college football talk. We're going to look at the big picture in a number of these conferences, see which teams could be good bets to make or miss the college football playoff. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
No Michael Lombardi today. Very grateful to have the one and only man, the myth, the legend, Matt Brown in studio with us.
I'm blushing. But that's why you get the VSiN Pro subscription. You see me blushing.
We need the VSiN Plus for some of our commercial breaks. They're very entertaining. I hear we have news.
Oh, we do. Guess what? Do you like paying kickers?
Because
the Cincinnati Bengals do, because they gave Evan McPherson a 3-year extension worth $10 million in the first year. $10 million in the first year for him. Now it's a $16.5 million extension overall. But you have a guy that's going to be happy kicking footballs there in Cincinnati.
How's T. Higgins feel about that?
I mean, seriously, you're like, guys, really? Seriously, come on. We're franchise tagging me, and we're going to get this guy that kicks all of this money. But McPherson can kick. He is one of the dudes that you are not afraid to line up.
T. Higgins, like, you won't pay me. Jamar Chase is waiting for his extension. Let's get Evan under contract forever. But hey,
you know, those texts are going back and forth right now, too, between them. It's happening.
Listen, the kicking game is super underrated. And especially for us from a betting perspective, like, how often does a win or loss come down to a freaking field goal? It does.
I mean, listen, if you feel good about your kicker, how many times have we seen teams also go through 3 or 4 kickers in the course of a season? Because, like, oh, that guy missed 3 field goals over the last 2 weeks. He out. You know, we go in, we threw another guy in, he misses 3 more field goals, and that guy is out of there. So it's interesting. But again, a lot of money being paid. And the reason I did bring it up is exactly why what you said. Because it's like, I wonder what that text message is going on between those guys. And they're like, happy for Evan. He's a cool dude, but
Interesting.
Yeah, they want to get the extension done with the kicker, do they?
There you go. Love it. We are 20 days away, by the way, from the start officially of the NFL regular season. We're down to single digits in college football, 8 days out from the college football kickoff game in Dublin with Georgia Tech and Florida State. Going to be a fun one. But I'm excited to talk a little bit of college football here because there are a lot of really interesting storylines and bets to be made in the college game.
I don't know if people know or not, but this lady right here to my right is on the sidelines each and every week of the college football season, breaking it down for you guys out there. So you better find the game that she's working and tune in and give it all the ratings along the way.
Yes, please. Please do that.
But it is one of those things where I love when we get to talk college football. You obviously pour your heart and soul into it and know as much as anyone in the industry about it. So it's fun times over here right now for me because I get to soak up some of this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, listen, I kind of specialize in SEC and I'll dabble in a couple of other conferences, but you know, college football writ large is not really my thing.
Well, don't worry. After I say this next thing, we will kick things off talking SEC so that you feel like you are in your comfort zone. But I did want to rehash something I said on the show yesterday for our audience with that week zero opening weekend, which terrible name. Why can't it just be week one?
I don't understand this.
But the fact that it is a 4-game slate, and I just want to make sure that our audience and the bettors at home recognize the fact that I know we're excited college football is on our screens. It's a 4-game slate. If things don't go well for you, betting Florida State, Georgia Tech, or maybe whatever one of the other games are, do not chase on Delaware State at Hawaii, I beg you.
And
I
just beg because you started college football doesn't mean you have to fire on every
just
game either.
Just wait for week one.
Yes, I just know that four-game parlay looks so good sitting in your account. You're like, I'm getting the winner of every one of these
you
games.
You know it. It's like, okay, I know that Georgia Tech's come down from 13.5 to 11.5, but we're still going to throw in the plus points there. We're going to take SMU.
We got more games coming.
We have more games. Okay, there are a lot of interesting prop markets that you can bet in college football at DraftKings right now. One of which are these odds to make the playoff arranged by conference. And the SEC has four teams that are odds on numbers to make the college football playoff. The Big Ten has, I want to say, three. So this is like, those are obviously the top tier conferences right now. People think are going to have multiple bids, but let's start in the SEC because I feel like the big question has been, how many teams is the SEC going to get in?
Right.
The prop is set at 4.5. The under is juiced to -150.
Yeah.
But I feel like if given the choice, I'm taking the +120 on the over.
So if you look at basically all of the college football experts out there, they will talk about Georgia, Texas as almost locks. I mean, like, you know, there's nothing's ever a lock, but they will talk about those two teams. Okay, those two teams are getting in. Now becomes that kind of second tier of like Ole Miss, Alabama, LSU, Tennessee, even Missouri start working their way into that second tier of people. Then you ask people like, hey, what team do you like in the SEC that no one's really talking about? Then they bring up A&M. And then there's just that looming Oklahoma still sitting out there. I think they'll struggle in year one in the SEC, but there's not like they're devoid of talent. So you do have all of these teams, like you said, Stormy, that's kind of like, okay, Georgia, Texas, let's just put them in. Let's just assume that everything goes. So two in. Definitely one of Ole Miss, Alabama, very highly likely makes it as well. So now we're three in. What if Ole Miss, Alabama do what everybody thinks? And sure, maybe you become two loss, but you look at that SEC and you go, man, two lost SEC teams probably should make it. So now you got four. So now is it LSU? Is it Tennessee? Is it Missouri? Is it A&M? What it would be that fifth team? I have LSU getting in.
Every time you say this is not a homer play, it is.
Look,
we just know.
Here's the thing. If you look,
is it because it's Brian Kelly in year three? And that's what happens in year three for Brian Kelly teams.
They ran so pure in scheduling. They ran so pure in scheduling. I mean, it was.
Yeah, but do they have the talent?
The talent on the offensive side of the ball is there. Defense, as you know, was absolutely atrocious last year. But then again, go out, clean house on the defensive side of the ball. Go in, bring in a whole new coaching staff. And if you look at the schedule for LSU, they avoid a couple of landmines. They get a couple of key games at home somewhere along the way with the schedule too. So I think that the over at plus money is at least interesting unless, Stormy, politics do come into play, in which they're kind of like, we can't do all this SEC bias stuff, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
I don't think that there will be a lack of SEC bias, just full disclosure. I feel like people recognize that this is the top conference in football. The Big Ten is certainly nipping at their heels, but
what
the SEC is still the SEC.
What do you think of Texas and Oklahoma coming over?
I I think that Texas is going to be very, very good year one and does have a reasonable expectation to contend for an SEC title in their first year. When I look at the SEC, I'm kind of looking for value a little bit more. And I think Missouri is a team that has the opportunity, given their schedule, to be one of those teams. And so no shade to LSU, shade to Tennessee. But Missouri, because of the teams that they avoid more than the teams they play, I think that's just going to give them an opportunity to pile up wins and put themselves in position genuinely where they could find themselves in an SEC title game because they don't have to play Georgia. They don't have, you know, they don't have to play Ole Miss. They don't have to play Tennessee. There's a lot of these major teams in the league that they avoid. So and they're very talented too.
Remind people we are now in a world of no divisions and whatever and all of that. So we don't have to worry about any of that nonsense anymore where it's like, oh, the Eastern Conference, the Western, no, none of that stuff. Like there's no divisions with all that. So it's all
that
just
makes
one
a big difference.
Yeah. One big group in all of that. So, yeah, I mean, not that we wanted to have this segment taken over by the SEC, but it's very intriguing because you do have two of the national title favorites in Georgia and Texas. You have everyone talking about Ole Miss and Jackson Dart and all of that. You know, so it's just an interesting conference top to bottom.
I'm going to skip over the Big 10 here and go to the Big 12 because that's a conference I find extremely interesting because all of the potential for parity there. They're over under for teams to get into the playoff is just 1.5. And I think that could be an interesting plus money on the over as well, because there's more talent, I feel like, than people realize in the Big 12. Utah, I love their first
Shocker.
Season in the
you
conference.
You love Utah? No. Stormy loves Utah.
So Matt's making fun of me. For anyone who doesn't know, I feel like I have been high on Utah for 3 years straight.
You have.
And I haven't been wrong.
You're the only person high in Utah, but yes.
So I have, with Cam Rising as their quarterback, I have not been wrong, but obviously he missed the entirety of last season, which people didn't expect for both he and Brant Keithy to miss everything, and it made a significant impact. He is an alpha, he is their leader, and he's an extremely talented veteran presence on that offense. I think they're going to win the Big 12. I think, and maybe I always call the Jets the ifers, because if they stay healthy, they can do this.
Sure.
That's how I feel about Utah.
Right.
If they stay healthy, they can, the sky's the limit. I think they could be unbelievable. One of the best head coaches in all of college football, in my opinion, Kyle Whittingham. The defense is going to be good, and they bring back a lot of their offensive talent.
It's the second team K-State.
But look down the list. So Kansas State, I think, even without Will Howard, is going to be really good. They have a ton of belief in Avery Johnson. Oklahoma State, top two in all of college football in returning production. They have one of the best, if not the best, running backs in college football coming back. Kansas had 8 regular season wins and a bowl win last year. They're getting Jalen Daniels back as their starter, which we know how good they were when he was on the field. Arizona has a coaching change, but keeps nearly all of their talent.
Right.
TCU might be a different, you know, situation right now. Sonny Dyke's still an excellent coach, and they're a year removed from a national championship appearance. So, like, this is a very interesting conference. And I didn't even mention UCF with KJ Jefferson coming over there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad you focused on Oklahoma State, because there's a lot of, like, coin flip games on that schedule that if they win the coin flip, like, they
could
be looking
at a Big 12 championship game last year.
They'd be looking at a very, very nice record, and they would not be able to keep them out.
So I get that there's going to be a lot of, like we talked about in the Pac-12 in years past, that they're just going to eat each other up in this league. There's potential for that. But I think it's very reasonable to see two teams from this conference get into the CFP.
Utah's plus 220. There it is. Throw it in the account. Put it in the account, Stormy.
Bet the over on the season win total.
Put it in the account.
I love them to make the CFP. I love them for everything. It's like I am drinking the Utah Kool-Aid yet again. We'll see how
things
play out
for me. It's
only
Kool-Aid in
Utah, so yeah, it's a good thing. We're going to hit the break when we come back to the NFL. Also, it's actually going to be a pretty busy sports weekend. We'll tell you why. When we return on the Lombardi Line, this is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
VSiN's Matt Brown in for Michael Lombardi today. Stormy Bonatoni with you as we welcome you back to this Friday edition of the Lombardi Line. The countdown continues to the NFL regular season. We're in preseason week 2, but 20 days away from kicking this thing off and having meaningful games back on our television screen, which means, Matt, this is about that time when people are getting locked and loaded, placing their futures bets. They are trying to figure out what they're going to do in their fantasy draft. And we have the perfect guest right now to help help us get set for the season. Jennifer Piacenti on the Progressive guest line, senior betting and fantasy analyst over at Sports Illustrated. You can follow her on X at Jen Piacenti. Thank you for joining us. And we're going to talk a lot of football here right now, but I got to give props, credit where credit is due. I was looking at your social media page this morning. You crushed your MLB picks yesterday. So if there's anything you can help us out with today, we are all ears.
Oh, yeah, there's a couple good bets on the board tonight. Well, first of all, let me say happy Patrick Corbin Day to those of you who celebrate. I absolutely love targeting hitters when Patrick Corbin is on the mound. And even better yet, it's the Phillies, who are basically the hottest team, maybe besides the Diamondbacks, but pretty close when facing southpaws. So the total today is only at 9. We know that Corbin likes to give up the long ball. We know his ERA in the second half of the season is over 7. We know that his ERA versus the Phillies this season is 6. And then we have these Phillies bats that just put up 13 on their lefty starter last night. So we're going to take the over at 9 here. I think it's generous. They're even giving us a push at 9. Games at, you know, Citizens Bank Park are averaging more than 9 runs per game this season and more than 10.5 since the All-Star break. So we're in on that over there. I like the hitting props for, you know, Boehm, Harper, Schwarber is good value. Over 1.5 total bases is in plus money. And then the other game I like, I really love this creative bet. So Pirates and Mariners, two teams that are struggling right now, to be kind, but yet they have their aces on the mound. And I know Skeens hasn't been as good of late, but the Mariners are striking out at a 30% clip this season, and they haven't seen Skeens. So in this situation, the advantage goes to the pitcher. The game total is set at just 7. Now, because both bullpens have struggled, I'm a little nervous to take the under there, especially since this juiced to minus 120. But there's a bet over on DraftKings. Neither team to score 4-5 runs, he's even money, plus 100, and neither team to score 4 runs, which seems totally plausible to me, he's plus 210. So those are my two plays I really like in that game.
Can you say happy Patrick Corbin Day to those who celebrate? I say happy Paul Skeens Day to everyone who should celebrate watching Paul Skeens take the hill with that glorious mustache of his, throwing 100 miles an hour and going out there and mowing down these hitters. So let's switch over to the NFL and over in the MVP market, a couple of different guys that you're looking at, one of which who might be looking at a contract, but he says things are cool.
Yeah, Dak Prescott, of course, is who you're talking about. There's a lot of questions right now in Dallas, right? Like, what's going on with CeeDee Lamb? What's this holdout about? But, you know, eventually Jerry Jones is going to open up his wallet. We saw him do this with Zeke Elliott a few years ago. Remember, it's going to be fine. What's interesting is that Dak right now is 17-1 to win the MVP. And I don't think once he re-signs the contract or once CeeDee Lamb re-signs the contract, that value will stay. I think the odds will get a little bit shorter. This is a player who did lead the league last season with 36 passing touchdowns. We know that the run game is going to be questionable. He's going to have to air it out. He's got Lamb. Cooks has looked good in preseason. Jalen Tolbert could step forward. Jake Ferguson. He has the weapon. And even better, if he doesn't get the contract, he's going to be playing for another contract somewhere else. And Mike McCarthy's on the hot seat. So at this value, 17-1, I'm in on Dak. When I do a futures bet, I don't like to tie up my bankroll for some, you know, 4-1 payout. It's not worth it. I want to take a big shot. The other player here, 17-1. The reigning NFL MVP, Lamar Jackson, who now gets the benefit of Derrick Henry leading his run game. And he's got the second year in Todd Monk in office. He's got healthy Mark Andrews. So both those players to me right now are very attractive at their current payouts.
So from MVP, let's go to comeback player of the year, because I think this is a very interesting market, especially since the AP decided to give voters a little bit of criteria thing to follow this year. They write, in the spirit of the AP comeback player of the year, they want a player who has demonstrated resilience in the face of adversity, overcoming illness, physical injury, or other circumstances that led him to miss playing time.
Not from getting back off the couch.
Not just from getting off the couch, like Joe Flacco winning over DeMar Hamlin last year, Exhibit A. So as you hear those guidelines for comeback player of the year, how has that shaped the way that you look at this? And have there been players that you've just X'd off the list because of it?
So I think that obviously Aaron Rodgers is the favorite for a reason in that respect. I mean, coming back from Achilles tear, missing the entire season. So there's going to be a lot of money on Rodgers there, but I can't put my money there because, again, this is somebody plus 140 or tying up your bankroll. Joe Burrow certainly faced adversity, you know, dealt with a few injuries, worked through them, and then got injured and set out for the entire season. He's 3-1. But I'm probably leaning towards the value, actually, of Sam Darnold. I mean, I consider having to, you know, work with Adam Gase and then going to the Panthers adversity.
That's fair. As someone who's married to a Panthers fan, that's fair.
And I think he's set up well. You know, we've never seen him in a really successful offensive system. I mean, limited play for the Niners, obviously, where hopefully he got kind of back on track. But Kevin O'Connell, I have a lot of faith in him. And then he's going to have a receiver like Justin Jefferson. And Justin Jefferson, who, by the way, a lot of people are fading in fantasy, but he was actually a target hog and spectacular with terrible quarterback play last season without Kirk Cousins. So Sam Darnold actually still has a lot of talent and a big arm, and he's set up to take this Vikings team that continues to take hits. Now we have questions. Will Jordan Addison be ready for week one? He's set up to make a splash and potentially be that comeback player. So at 12-1, I'm interested in Darnold.
Talking to Jennifer Piacenti here on the Progressive Guest Line. Find her over at Sports Illustrated. Not only talking sports betting, would also talk in fantasy. Let's look at offensive rookie of the year. There are a couple, of course, we've got the quarterbacks that we know are going to play, but as far as the skill position players, there are a couple of guys that got drafted that we know are going to have major, major roles for these teams. And this is one that you're looking at.
Yeah. And of course you want to have one of those players that you know is going to have an opportunity. It's very rare that you have a situation like Justin Herbert, where he suddenly takes over the starting job in week three, and then leads all rookies in passing yards. That can happen, though, so don't be afraid to take a few big shots. But obviously, the leaders here are Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels, who will be quarterbacks. Obviously, a quarterback has a lot of impact on the game and if they're successful. But as I said earlier, I don't like those tiny payouts, 3-1, 1.5-1. I'm taking my shot on Malik Nabers. I know that Marvin Harrison Jr. is the higher drafted wideout, especially in fantasy right now. But when I do my projections, they have about the same amount of targets, about 140 targets going their way. Obviously, Murray is the better quarterback than Daniel Jones, but there's just, Nabers has looked great in preseason, and there's just a lot of reasons to be optimistic at 11-1. I'm willing to take that shot.
Yeah, it's just to your point, it's a matter of can Daniel Jones get the ball out to him. And right, with Drew Lock injured right now and Tommy DeVito behind him, like, the quarterback situation is definitely what you worry about with that. But I do like the 11-1 number, and the Giants are certainly extremely high on the guy they took at number 6 overall this year. Jennifer, I want to ask you from a fantasy perspective, obviously a lot of people are getting geared up for this season. They're figuring out where they're going to draft, who they want to target. What's just some general advice you have for people who are getting set for the season?
So first off, obviously this may sound really basic, but be sure to check your league scoring. Okay. If it's a PPR league, you can wait on running back. If you don't get one of those great spots where you can get, you know, Bijan Robinson, Jonathan Taylor, don't panic. Get that elite wide receiver. There is so much value late at runner this year. Into the 4th, 5th, 6th round, you can still get Zach Moss. You can pair Nick Chubb and Jerome Ford in like the 7th and the 9th round and just take that whole Cleveland backfield. So don't panic if you don't get the runner. I know that in the past, we've always been like, running back, that's your bread and butter. But the league is changing, and with every catch being an extra point, you have to suddenly weight those receivers and even tight ends, which is a little bit deeper of a position this year, a little bit higher. So don't be afraid. That being said, if you like to go hero running back, go for it. It has been a winning strategy. Also, be sure you check the points for your quarterbacks. Leagues are changing. Sometimes it's 4 points for passing touchdowns. Sometimes it's 6 points per passing touchdown. And that will change a lot over whether maybe you value Anthony Richardson over CJ Stroud, right? So be sure you check those things out. Overall, I would say the overall arching trend I've seen is you can wait a little bit longer and still get really competent runners this year. Listen, Derrick Henry is sometimes going in the 3rd round. I mean, this guy is going to score 14 touchdowns. It's not like Jalen Hurts. People are like, oh, you know, Lamar's going to take his goal line carries. Lamar runs a lot, but he doesn't take those goal line carries. Henry is going to be a beast, Even Gus Edwards was a beast. Now, put Derrick Henry there. I am all in. I don't care that he's a 31-year-old unicorn. Give me that unicorn in the third round every day of the week.
Jennifer, you're awesome. Thanks for everything. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys.
Jennifer Piacenti, everybody. Again, you can check her out on X as well as Sports Illustrated. Her picks, as well as all of the picks from all of our VSiN show hosts, guests, analysts, across the board, available each and every day at VSiN.com/picks. We're turning the page to preseason week 2 when we return on the Lombardi Line.